This is all included in my video of Rose McGowan.
I've got to see it.
Yeah, go back and watch Rose McGowan. You'll scrape your eyes out. So, yeah, because it's like, it's really thick. But the new, okay, now here's what really gets twisted. So I went and go see Terminator, and I'm processing all of this shit, right? I'm like, okay. I see everything that's in there, but I don't know how to put it together. And so I'm folding laundry, and I turn on Dawn of the Planet of the Apes because it's on HBO right now. So that's why I'm watching it. So I put it on, and then I quickly realize the main guy who plays John Connor in Terminator is the main protagonist. Protagonist is the good guy, right?
Yeah.
He's the main human protagonist in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, both movies take place in San Francisco. In fact, if you look at their posters, both highlight the bridge prominently. And it's weird because now I can't look at the Golden Gate Bridge without thinking about the Confederate flag. Because it's got the X's in it.
Oops.
I just had this hilarious sick fantasy that since we took down the Confederate flag, that there's like some kind of weird occult symbol, and that the U.S. is now defenseless from the aliens. And so now we have all these crazy shit going on. So thank you.
Well, it's weird because, okay, this is fucked up. And Michael, you might take offense to this, but I don't want you to. So, Confederate flag does not necessarily stand for, like, the Confederacy did not rise to protect slavery. They were fighting for states' rights. Of course, the main issue was slavery. I'm not defending slavery. But the Confederate flag is a symbol of rebellion. Not necessarily hate.
Right.
And so it's a symbol of states' rights. Directly after the Confederate flag goes up, they make the decision for gay marriage, and immediately everybody goes, states' rights. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes.
So the symbol of states' rights is taken down, and then it's immediately trumped.
And it's replaced by the rainbow flag. And I was just like going... Well, you know, because the big image from that day was the White House was suddenly doused in rainbow colors. And I know a little bit about, because my father was a lighting electrician. And you don't just go say, yay, the Supreme Court, you know, passed gay marriage. And let's just put a bunch of lights in front of the White House to make it look like that. That takes like planning. Serious planning.
Doesn't it all seem planned? Like everything?
Yes, it's totally fucking planned.
Yes, everything is planned these days. I have no doubt.
I completely agree with you. And the weird, the Confederate flag.
Because it was only like halfway
shamed, and then the gay flag suddenly just like boom there.
Boom, there it's going. And the same thing. The whole time this whole convergence in the sky thing is going on. And then these two movies are really big right now. One's playing on HBO, one's not. And I don't give a fuck what anybody says. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is about like racism and hate and prejudice. It's all about prejudice. And so the fucked up thing is like, okay, so we have John Connor shows up in Planet of the Apes, right? And of course, who's playing the lead good guy in Planet of the Apes? That is the monkey, right? The Caesar. His name is Caesar, which is Julius Caesar or Jesus Christ, right?
Right, right. Absolutely.
He's played by Andy Serkis, the guy who plays King Kong.
Right.
Whoa. They didn't
have to do that. That's so symbolic. And the whole deal with New York, and he's holding the fucking Statue of Liberty. You know, he's got the whole... Because it's referencing the end of the original Planet of the Apes with the Statue of Liberty. But New York was always... See, I'm tripping out, dude. I'm tripping out on a bunch of things. I need to see this Black Moon Rising, man. I'm nerding out on it. It's all about this fucking car that looks just like the DeLorean from Back to the Future, and apparently it crashes into the fucking two towers in the movie.
It's like the movie poster has the car going through the Twin Towers, but it's his eye. It's like the Horus eye. It's like the plucking of the left eye, right?
No, dude. Got the fucking DeLorean crashing into the two towers in this movie with Linda Hamilton.
And it's that's bananas.
It's fucking written.
It looks like
John fucking John Carpenter.
What's the name of this movie again?
Escape from New York, John Carpenter, the same fucking guy. It's called
Black
Moon Rising.
Oh my god.
No, the DeLorean movie.
Black Moon
Rising. Yeah, I'm saying Black Moon Rising. They have
Black,
this fucking
shit.
Yeah.
See, King Kong is in love with the moon. It all has to do with the moon child. The fucking Antichrist is the same thing as the Savior's return. Jesus and Lucifer are the exact same thing. Rosemary's Babies, both.
Someone just pointed out that the word monster comes from moon child, from a dead tongue. Who was saying this on fucking Facebook? Because I looked it up.
That was on a day.
Okay, so, but the thing was, oh man. So monster was connected to mind, I found out, just etymologically, like that's the view. But then, oh fuck, dude. Moon child was actually ends with an E, which literally meant warrior of the moon, and not necessarily a child, is what they were saying. And I was tripping out on that in terms of King Kong.
Okay, I got one more for you as far as Planet of the Apes go. Planet of the Apes, have you seen the original with, of course, it has the Wizard of Oz in it. James Franco is the guy who creates the virus. It's got the Oz thing going on, right? It's the strength card straight up. And you can hear because Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is playing in the background right now. It was funny because it starts off with the monkeys chasing elks. And when we started this conversation is when it started. So you guys were talking about, of course, I couldn't say anything. But you guys are talking about horns and elk and stuff, and that's what was going on in the TV behind me. The kids are sleeping.
Awesome, but I have to request that you not have the volume of your show while we're trying to have a radio program.
I know. But the kids,
you're like,
the
it's always record. No one cares.
Hey,
no one listens to this anyway.
Okay, now listen though. But he creates it. James Franco works for the company called Genesis. And
I just found Black Moon Rising full movie free on YouTube.
Oh yeah, it's there.
Fuck.
The car in that poster the DeLorean looks also like the monolith, very much, at least if you turned it up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like sleek black.
Yeah.
Square.
Well, when I typed in Black Moon Rising, I got a fucking picture of the Batmobile, which I thought was really ironic because it's got Tommy Lee Jones, who were just talking about him and Batman. But yeah.
That's great.
Two-Face.
So you were saying child ends with E. That reminds me of the name Rothschild.
So he's a warrior. Rothy warrior.
Yeah.
Okay.
1986. John Carpenter. This is a freaking. How did I not know about a John Carpenter movie called Black Moon Rising?
Right.
That came out right the fuck after Terminator.
And right, if this is 1986, this is right after Back to the Future, also. Right, Back to the Future was 1985, wasn't it?
Whoa, wasn't the first Terminator 1985 too? Those movies came out back to back. That's crazy. I bet you they're like on the same weekend or some shit. Guaranteed.
So I just had that happen where I was watching fucking Titanic. Because I've been relating Titanic as like a whole thing, the subtext of Helter Skelter all the way through. I have this whole thing there. It's tripping out on it. And I was like on a hunch. I was like, I bet you fucking Titanic is the same length as the miniseries Helter Skelter from 1976. And it was. It was 149 minutes, both Titanic and Helter Skelter. But then I watched fucking Aviator about Howard Hughes with Leonardo DiCaprio. And then those ended up being very close to the same time, too. But I thought that was weird because Leonardo DiCaprio in the Howard Hughes movie, it's the world's biggest plane, right? It's the fucking, what they call it, the Spruce Goose or whatever.
Spruce Goose, right.
Which was the Hercules, really.
Yeah, Hercules, H4.
Right. But then Titanic is about the world's biggest boat. So you got like the biggest boat and the biggest plane, both Leonardo DiCaprio, both like Leo, you know, whatever, the sun, I'm the biggest, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You could argue otherwise, but anyways, I don't know.
That's cool.
I don't know.
Wow. Back to the Future came out on July 3rd, 1985. But July 3rd. Right.
Okay. Dude,
July
that was
3rd.
Jim Morrison's death day, and that was also Tom Cruise's birthday. I saw the other day because it came up, and then I was like, wait a minute. Tom Cruise was born on the 4th of July, and he was born on the 3rd of July? And then I can't help but think, and then I can't help but think at the end of The Shining and Eyes Wide Shut at the same time, but that's another thing.
Okay. You got to let me talk about this because you brought up Howard Hughes, which is like freaks me out because he's a central character in The Rocketeer. And this is like one of my weird personal sick movies. Anyway, on 7/7, one of this stupid website that I watch is all about car auctions. Comes up with a Mercedes-Benz that was owned by Howard Hughes. And this was on 7/7. And if you go to The Rocketeer, the plane that starts the movie is number 7/7. And it crashes. So it's all about the plane crash, Howard Hughes, and this number 7/7 lightning bolt. That's perfect. It's just, that's wacky.
Yeah.
That is really specific. I much less specific. I don't know. I guess everyone can see the chat I'm doing on Skype. I just want to. I'm sure no one here has seen it, but there's a 1975 movie called Black Moon, which I really like. That I actually uploaded to Dropbox 42 because I like it so much.
Okay.
So it's free. Don't try and download it while on this call because I'm sure that'll throw the whole connection off if everyone's trying to download a 500 megabyte movie. But it's there. If anyone wants to, if we're going to watch Black Moon Rising, we might want to also watch Black Moon.
All right. Or Black Snake Moan or whatever. But I just watched the scene where Tommy Lee Jones crosses the wire. But it looks like they're like symbolically the towers. I don't know if they're it doesn't look like they're actually the towers.
All the movie posters say it's 30 stories over Los Angeles.
Okay. But the point is that symbolically speaking, he just fucking climbed across the thing on a wire of these two towers. So that does happen in there, just so you know.
Well, you know, you guys, I'm not a big Planet of the Apes fan, but I have watched one Planet of the Apes movie, which was the one that had Mark Wahlberg in it. It was from
2001.
Yeah, which was really awful. But
that wasn't the point. They had to release it in time.
Yeah, it's all about the date on that one.
But it's very sinky, and there's lots of, you know, now that I look back on it, lots of interesting symbolism. But the thing is that all the gorillas are the cops, and the cops are all black gorillas, and they fucking sound black. So you're talking about Planet of the Apes all being, you know, being about racism. And I thought this, when I watched this movie, I thought it was extremely racist. I mean, all the chimps have like little English accents, you know, and they're all very, you know, enlightened.
Educated.
Yeah.
Right. It's the intellectual white man and the it's like brains and brawn.
Yeah,
I totally get that. Yeah, that's fucked.
And you know, I found it to be borderline offensive, you know, in its characterization of you know, the apes, you know, and then, you know, making a rather direct, overtly direct
Wahlberg thing plays Wahlberg plays Captain Leo in that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that movie, that particular movie, focuses on the idea of him time traveling. Like, the original Planet of the Apes has this idea of, like, okay, he's still landing back on Earth, but in the, like, there's this time warp, let's say, but not like he's not going back in time, he's going into the future. You know, playing with this idea of Einstein's theory of relativity.
Yeah.
But the Mark Wahlberg one actually has like a wormhole time travel thing.
Disturbance.
Oh, definitely.
Thing. And of course, the Mark Wahlberg one ends with him crashing into the Lincoln Memorial. So it automatically, right. So he pulls up and the general is sitting up underneath there. So it's this whole thing about, you know, it having specifically to do with racism.
Well, I always took that at the end of time because he hits the fucking Saturn symbol, right?
Well, they're actually in orbit around Saturn when they doing their little experiments on Earth, and they're so to me they're, you know, originally Wahlberg and the humans are like playing the role of, you know, alien angels, you know, or Saturnian angels or whatever, and they somehow get sucked into their own little genetic experiment because in fact the ape they have on board is a genetically modified ape that lands on Earth and is treated like, you know, is the ape's Jesus, you know, and it all gets very mashed, but it's fucking nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they made it a point in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes of emphasizing Jacob's ladder because he has the chalkboard, the fucked up ape, and it says Jacob's. He's written it out in chalk or whatever, but then he has the DNA strand, and so you're like, oh, Jacob's ladder, and then it's Genesis, and then the symbol in Genesis then shows you the strand.
Well,
again.
Just about every symbol of a tree is used in that first, the newest Planet of the Apes. Is that the one you're talking about? The one with Franco?
No, that's not the newest. The newest was a whole other level. It's like them fighting.
No, that one's Dawn. I'm just saying the newest when you were talking about the Jacob's Ladder and stuff, you're talking about the Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, Rise. Did I say Dawn? I got that wrong.
Yeah, Dawn is the newest one. But I just consider
it. You're helping Skelter there, right in the fucking title. It's all Rise again. And then that was the thing they emphasized with Batman, where you had the fucking Aurora shooting, and you're like, oh, you know, they just. I don't know.
That's Black Moon Rising. Is the same thing, and that was one of the Helter Skelter words, right? It's just Rise.
Yeah.
Right.
And that whole thing about a Helter Skelter and the White Album telling, you know, Manson that there was going to be a race war, and it's like all the shit that's been going on this summer, you know, which is calling
starting with the Ole Sing Summit, pretty much.
The fucking day. Yes.
And it's not just that day; it's that was the when they recorded "Lie," which is symbolic. So you're like, you record a year to the day in 1968, the album "Lie," and then you do the overdubs on 9/11. Is that right, Patrick? Is Patty there? Okay. Well,
anyway. The other way around.
Is it the other way around? Strike that, reverse it? Okay, I thought maybe so. But yeah, you got these two dates, and you're like 9/11 and August 8th and 9th is when they recorded, which are the 2 days of the two killings, right? And so, it was really weird because that was the deal. Like, because it wasn't just what happened that fucking day? That kid was shot with stealing cigars or whatever that set this whole thing going.
Yeah, they did it on Ferguson. Just call it Ferguson.
Day. They did it on fucking Helter Skelter Day of all fucking days.
Right.
It feels like, and then that same album is Lie, and then you're like, Lie, this event that he's incorporated with, you know, and then you have Lie, fucking 9/11. And it's not like these events didn't happen. It's just, you know, and there's so many fucking holes in that thing. And I was looking at recently, I'm sorry to go here, but like Susan Atkins, you know her thing with Anton LaVey? She did a film with Anton LaVey before the murders, where she was a vampire, and she gets out of a coffin, and I saw an interview with her talking about it, and she took acid before it, and she points at her next victim. But you can watch this fucking film of like Susan Atkins getting out of a coffin, pointing at a bunch of Hollywood stars and or whatever, you know, they're celebrities who are all at fucking LaVey's thing, and pointing to her next victim. Meanwhile, Sharon Tate was a victim of vampires in Fearless Vampire Hunters. Roman Polanski's film he starred in there with her with, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's really weird. And she's the source of your whole Beatles thing. Manson still denies anything to do with the Beatles and the whole Helter Skelter trip. Like, he's like, where did this come from? It came from Susan Atkins talking to her cellmates. But then Susan Atkins is over here hanging out with the guy who was the primary consultant for Rosemary's Baby. And that's another Rosemary's Baby connection in that way. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's very strange.
That's.
I also like in Dawn, or not Dawn, but Rise and the Planet of the Apes, like, when Caesar is born, he's born with like a birthmark.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And go ahead.
The guy who they ship him off to this monkey farm, right? When he bites the dude's finger off or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the guy who's watching over the monkeys and who's stabbing him with like this little cattle prod is Ron Weasley from Harry Potter.
No, it's Draco. It's Draco.
Yeah, not Ron Weasley. You're right. It's Draco Malfoy. Excuse me. It's the bad guy.
Okay.
So the cattle prod is like the magic wand, the magician.
Yeah.
And he's playing opposite of this birthmarked savior.
Can I just jump in here? I was writing about how the Lincoln assassination is and 9/11 are symbolically the exact same thing, right? So I've dug a lot into this. The idea of you mentioned Wahlberg crashing into the Lincoln Monument, and you keep saying Caesar, the guy's name is Caesar. You notice that when Lincoln was killed, he was killed by a guy
who quotes Julius Caesar.
Exactly.
Well, he quotes Brutus.
The only reason he quotes Julius Caesar is because it didn't have to do with slavery. It had to do with tyrannical states' rights.
My point is right. This. All right. Okay.
What about
his dad? Wait. John Wilkes Booth. His dad is named Brutus. Like, biologically, he was already destined to resonate.
Yeah, too. Oh, fuck, that's awesome.
But so, okay, the end of Planet of the Apes, the first one when he's at the Statue of Liberty, that would be the biggest nuclear bomb that we ever set off was called the Tsar Bomb, named after Caesar. That's where the word Tsar comes from. So going to the east to meet the Tsar and not to touch the earth, not to see the sun, which are two chapters in the Golden Bough. You know what I'm talking about? So the Doors song, not to touch the earth, not to see the sun, it says we're going to the east to meet the Tsar, which is the Caesar. Okay. The Tsar bomb would be, if we were to have a nuclear winter, it would be the result specifically of the Tsar bomb, which is pretty nuts. I don't know if you guys have ever seen pictures of the Tsar bomb, but it's an atomic bomb that's like the biggest atomic bomb we built. Just saying, that's relatable. I mean, you're looking at the Statue of Liberty after that, but then you follow that with Caesar, you know. Very strange.
I put this movie poster in because I'm kind of looking at it right now, and it looks like there's some weird stuff going on in it. Like, I've read a whole bunch of Brian Wilson Keyes stuff and how they hide, like, images inside of images. You know what I mean? Like,
wait, the guy's name is Brian Wilson, like the lead singer of the Beach Boys?
Wilson Brian Keyes.
Wait, you realize...
to exist.
Wait, you realize... That's the lead singer of the Beach Boys, who Charles Manson wrote a song for the Beach Boys, right?
Yeah.
Ceased to exist.
Sorry.
And Keyes also wrote the national anthem, by the way.
That's right. Francis Scott Key, Turning Black Keys.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Stanley Kubrick, Anagram?
Yeah. Turns Black Keys.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark LeClaire.
So then we have Planet of the Apes. And
Black Moon in the Middle Rising.
2001 A Space Odyssey came out on the same weekend. And they were in the same year that the World Trade Center broke ground, which was 1969 or 68.
68.
But.
It was 68. Huh. When did the...
It was the same year that Rosemary's Baby came out. Rosemary's Baby came out, the Twin Towers started, Planet of the Apes, and 2001 all came out in the same year.
Yeah, 1968. Wait a minute! You're fucking blowing my mind! That's crazy!
Right. And so then in 1999,
January 1st, 2001, and then he fucking comes out with 2001, the year the fucking trade centers start getting built.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yes.
All of those things happen in the same year. Like, some things were closer than others, but all of those things happened. And then in 1999, you had End of Days, and you had Astronaut's Wife come out. And End of Days has Arnold, a.k.a., you know, the Terminator, with Robin, right? And the World Trade Center is highly recognized.
You just tripped me out. You said Robin at the exact same moment I was thinking Robin.
Well, look, think about the new movie coming out by Robert Zemeckis later this year with Joseph Gordon-Levitt on the wire walking
Man
across.
On the wire, yeah.
He's Robin.
See, that's Jake, fucking Joseph weird Gordon because it was Levitate. Just fucking Tommy Lee Jones. I just watched Cross fucking Towers on Black Moon Rising. That's really weird because that was the one with Robin.
If you see if you go look at the Robert Zemeckis movie's trailer, he's wearing like a black. He goes across and he's wearing like a black jacket with a vivid red shirt. That's the red-chested Robin.
Yeah. Straight up. What's the esoteric or occult meaning of Robin?
Oh, you remember what Coates has said? He said it, he gets the red chest from pulling out the thorns out of Christ's brow. The Irish or something that believe that.
Okay.
And if you look at Looper, Bruce Willis is wearing the red shirt. He's wearing the exact same thing in Looper as he does when Joseph Gordon-Levitt travels or transverses the towers.
I've had a lot of Robin sinks lately, but Robins have sky blue eggs, and that's the big sink for me personally. So there's like this weird red chest and then the sky blue egg of, you know, rebirth, I guess. I don't know.
I've just been tripping out on blue eggs, man, because we keep getting these blue eggs from the geese and the chickens that we have. They're big blue eggs. They're awesome.
Yeah, cool.
Dark Moon Rising, huh? What the... It looks like, what was it? I want to say Bad Moon Rising, but that's just in the movie. American Werewolf in London.
Oh, you have this thing I just dropped in?
What's that?
This thing I just dropped in?
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
and
so
look
here
like
it
roses
is.
Roses Above Rising.
Yeah. It's like a different movie with the same name. And this is like Beauty and the Beast, which is again Linda Hamilton was Beauty and the Beast, right?
Yeah, it's not even pretending because you have the roses right there.
No, they're making it as much of a point as they can. That's fucking weird, it seems. It would seem as though Dark Moon Rising is taking Black Moon Rising and emphasizing the Beauty and the Beast dynamic because of the crossing of the towers of Tommy Lee Jones. Weird.
So it would appear, although I don't know if these people actually put that much thought into it, but it certainly looked that way.
It's like, we're just what you'd expect, dude. They gave it to you. Look at that, dude. Yeah. With the fucking moon body. Oh, my God, dude. Come on. Come on. With the lightning coming out. Just so you don't forget Zeus.
Golden Gate Bridge, man. If something happens to the Golden Gate Bridge,
don't say that in front of Michael.
No, please don't.
Why?
Dude.
Just moving on.
San Andreas. Have you seen San Andreas yet?
Yes, I know of San Andreas, but I really did go temporarily insane with this fear that the Golden Gate Bridge was going to be, you know, attacked by some kind of, you know, quote unquote terrorist threat. I don't want to go there.
God. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
It was just nuts.
San Andreas, the new Terminator. They have this huge, big school bus thing that happens on the Golden Gate. Like, it's surrounded. Monsters versus aliens. They destroy the robot on the Golden Gate Bridge.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, the authority on the significance of the Golden Gate Bridge is Scott Onstott. And his CEO on fucking... San Francisco is.
Oh, I bet. I bet he's like measured it from top to bottom and across and. Oh yeah.
No, it's everything. It's the gate thing that you got the souls progression through the two bridges, and he has this whole relationship between the. He nails it, dude. Jeff Bridges. That's why, you know, pretty sure. God.
I mean, this is my point. So there's the guy who, I found this through Freeman, actually, Alex, you mentioned this. Freeman interviewed this guy, I can't think of his name right now. I've mentioned this before, but Freeman interviewed a guy who was one of the architects on the World Trade Center. He's not like, he was just someone who worked at the architecture firm. Yeah. And Paul Waffley, that's his name. And, Paul Waffley says that this is the guy who says that the Bin Laden group who financed the World Trade Center came up to him while he's sitting at his drafting desk in the 60s, 70s and said, where do we put the explosives when we want to take this down? so that he says that they asked him specifically when the thing was built, it was built to explode. But he said that he proposed a version of the Twin Towers where they have bridges connecting the Twin Towers. And that he said, he literally says the magic number was 17 bridges to connect the Twin Towers. And the main architect fired him on the spot because he said the Twin Towers couldn't be connected. They had to vibrate like tuning forks.
They look like tuning forks on the bottom too.
Yeah, so he's saying if you connect them, you take away you take away that effect.
So it's fucked up. I watched the Beauty and the Beast thing. I watched a whole bunch of seasons. I didn't get through the whole stuff, but the Linda Hamilton one thing with Ron Perlman, I was just looking. And there's this whole story arc where, the basic overall gist is she's in the real world, he's in the underworld. And every time if she's in trouble, he hops on a subway train and finds her there because they have this special like telepathic link. Anyways, there's this bad guy who's taking out all of the elderly and whatever in a block or certain block radius, like 20 blocks or something like that. Because his dream is to build this awe-inspiring skyscraper in the New York skyline. It's a big phallic symbol, basically. But it's like they keep showing pictures of this enormous thing. And that's her love interest outside of the Beast.
Oh,
and it's
shit.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, that's his whole thing is, like, running everybody out of this. They have this whole scene where he's kicking out all these old Jewish people and stuff so he can resurrect this enormous. And he's, like, the main bad guy, antagonist against Ron Perlman's Beast, who's trying to save everybody's house and everything like that. And this guy's trying to resurrect. And there's this really weird scene where he's explaining this thing to Linda Hamilton. And the scene has, like, a freaking Abraham Lincoln statue in the background just sitting there kicking it, and my eye kept drifting to it like, what the fuck is that doing there, right? and then he stands up and he goes over and he looks out the window and he puts his hand right on the Abraham Lincoln, like, it wasn't just in the background, I want all of your attention right here on Abraham Lincoln. Like, yeah, really.
Hey,
messed with
in
me
in terms of programming. What's the first thing, like Honest Abe? Like, Abe is associated with honesty. That's, like, his trait as a president. You're like, that Abe, he was an honest man. He fucking walked back to the fucking library with that fucking hay penny because they gave him too much. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, right.
It's and so you're like, okay, so then we're associating this, you know, this guy with, like, the one of this giant fucking lie. Like, it's just, it's so weird.
So it's weird because the Winnipeg crew, who cites all of the weird stuff that's in the peg leg, the Winnipeg legislative building or whatever, all of the marble work on that is the same artist who did the Lincoln Memorial. And in all actuality, the Lincoln Memorial is designed to be the Temple of Jupiter or Zeus.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that they're the place that they do tours of to see, like, the temple, the fucking that building that with the crazy star in the middle.
It's the same stone worker who did the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah, same.
That's crazy.
Stone cutter, actually. Stone.
No, because that's crazy to begin with. I mean, the whole.
Yeah, that's Solomon's Temple. Like the peg leg is Solomon's Temple. And then the Lincoln Memorial is Jupiter's temple, or Zeus. So Lincoln is
Jupiter.
Zeus, Jupiter is Lincoln. They're that's who Lincoln's supposed to be in the Lincoln Memorial. He's sitting in the throne of Jupiter.
Yeah, he's definitely in a temple, in a Greek temple.
Doesn't he look like the emperor from Tarot, like in his throne, except he doesn't have the thing in his hand
Zeus and Jupiter.
I didn't know you were an Aries.
Zeus and Jupiter, I didn't know you're referencing King Kong. So, Zeus and Jupiter are that's the throat chakra, the one of honesty and whatever. Mm-hmm. Honesty and communication. Of course, Abraham Lincoln's known for his speeches.
Yeah, Honest Abe. 420 years ago.
420.
420. Right. Which, have you seen Jim Sanders? Oh my God, Jim Sanders' video 420 Kong.
Yeah, where everybody in the movie is related to the birthday of 420. Like every main character and every main incantation. So you have the 19th.
King Kong is born on April 20th.
Right. So in the original King Kong, because okay, so in the newest King Kong with Peter Jackson, it's Andy Serkis, because Andy Serkis's birthday is on April 20th. And the next incantation, or I'm not even saying that word right, I don't think. But the 1970s version of King Kong, I think it's Jessica Lange. Jessica Lange is born on April 20th.
Right, we went over before, which is weird because of I Heart Huckabees. Because fucking Lily Tomlin, who's in the movie. Well, no, I'm getting something mixed up.
So
what was it again?
I remember Jim Sanders put that out. He was like, okay, so Andy Serkis is 420, Jessica Lange is 420. Maybe we should check that. I'm pretty sure that's true.
But, oh, yeah, he was looking for pictures of Lange.
Yeah, so I was like, wait a minute. If that's two of them, there's got to be a third one. So I looked up the old King Kong and the original Jack. So it's Jack, King Kong, and the girl. Her name changes during the different ones, but those are the three main characters of King Kong. I'm sure we can all agree on that. So it's
right,
Jack.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So the original Jack's birthday was on 422.
Okay.
You're killing me.
So in one movie, in one movie it's the man, in one movie it's the woman, in the other movie it's the Kong himself.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So it's scattered throughout. It's like you can't ignore it. And it's the same thing with it's weird because in Terminator, everybody involved with that as their birthdays are in July. So they're all born up underneath, or July, August. All of their birthdays are Leos. I think Charlize Theron's a Leo too.
Wouldn't be surprising.
One of these Black Moon Rising posters that I was looking at says on it, I guess the movie takes place on August 25th, because it says, on August 25th, something, I don't know, it's all, in German or some shit, but it's a foreign movie poster. It actually has that date on it.
Real quick, it's funny you went from 9/11 to Winnipeg, because Winnipeg's hockey team used to be the Jets for 42 years, depending on how you reverse that. Then they were Atlanta, which was for about 12 years, half of 24. And they were the Atlanta Thrashers. But the Thrashers, that's a different team. But then they've come back to Winnipeg.
No, then they were the Osama bin Ladens after that for 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm watching Tusk.
Oh, you know, I want to go back to the Planet of the Apes for a second and the Mark of the Beast, because you guys were talking about tattoos and shit and marks and stuff. And if you guys remember, Mark Wahlberg gets tattooed by the apes with a symbol on his, he's made to take a mark on his hand, and it's a trident.
Yeah. There you go. Shin, Judgment, which was just said in the, comments here. Because we were talking
you're talking about Michael's dentist, which isn't sheen as the tooth.
Yeah.
The Skynet funding bill is passed. The system goes online August 4th, 1997. Human decisions are removed from strategic defense. Skynet begins to learn at a geometric rate. It becomes self-aware at 2:14 a.m. Eastern Time, August 29th. In a panic, they try to pull the plug.
August 29th. So like I said, this...
Burning Man, when they burn the man, can kill.
That's August 29th?
Yeah, it's the end of August. Yeah, it's 29th might be the day they traditionally actually do the burning, I think.
So,
214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214, 214 is A, 4 is D, bad. Jupiter is bad.
Michael Jackson.
Kevin Howcott just posted something where Michael Jackson was doing the moonwalk during some lightning strike, Michael's again.
Moonchild.
Definitely.
Oh, well, he has a monolith he grew up in as a tribute to Michael Jackson because of Moonwatcher. So they connected the fucking Moonwatcher, who was the guy who in real life who was the director of photography for John Lennon's Imagine video, the ape, the actor who was the ape of Moonwatcher in the film. And so when at Michael Jackson's hometown, there's a giant monolith with him moonwalking on the monolith in front of his house he lived in. You guys know that?
Is this for real?
Yeah, for real.
Are you making that up?
No. It's on my blog. I'm sure you guys, you missed something on my blog? Jesus.
Here, I'm dropping in this movie poster. I think this is a German movie poster. And this says here, it says, AM 25 August Verschwindelt aus der Lucky Dollar Corporation ein Microcassette. Something.
Microcassette, yes.
It is microcassette. The whole thing centers around a microcassette.
But so August 25th,
Ein super Schlitten, das schnellste Auto der Welt. That's world, right? Welt? Or I don't know. You'd think I'd know German better than I do.
This movie was produced or written by John Carpenter, too. So there's another JC for you.
Yeah, another JC in the mix.
It's JC, but as they pointed out, this is also, I think it was David who said, John Carpenter's the guy who did Escape from New York, which has the plane flying into the World Trade Center.
Right, but then Joe pointed out that in Escape from L.A., where they land the plane in the terrorist attack, is you can see the clock tower from Back to the Future because it's the same set, but they didn't bother to change it. And it's like one of the only times you'll ever see that fucking clock tower in any other movie. And they left it with the fucking time and everything on there. It's still a clock tower.
That's great.
Not only is he JC, he's a carpenter.
So. Right.
Yeah, the Masonic carpenter. Right. Yeah.
Lands a plane once on the towers, and then he lands it at the fucking clock tower. And then Escape from New York, and then Escape from LA. And LA, you know, you have your whole AL, LA. If you look at what is it? I have to look at my representation of it, but O and Z and L and A, because A is the opposite of Z and L is the opposite of O. So if you reverse the alphabet of the alphabet, A and L and O and Z have
they live, which is they, A, live, L, which.
Right, well, yeah,
kind of phonetically.
Libra Al and Libra Oz, right? But yep. So when did he do They Live, John Carpenter, in relationship to this?
That was like 87.
We realized They Live ends with the explosion at the top of a tower also.
That's true. Which allows everyone to see everything for what it is, and the fucking...
Yeah, you expose the lie.
They exposed the lie through the destruction of a tower. That's the end of They Live.
Yeah.
It was 1988.
Shit.
Oh, but, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Okay. So I'm looking up
88 miles an hour.
I'm looking up more, okay, about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, because there's one character I like a lot called Koba, and I look to see who Koba is, and he is a character named, or an actor named Toby Keeble, and actually it's his birthday, July 9th is his birthday. Hey. So we just passed his birthday, but he plays in a movie called The Conspirator, and he plays the character of John Wilkes Booth. John Wilkes Booth. So the main bad guy in the new Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is John Wilkes Booth.
What?
So
that's
there you
really
go.
Weird, man.
Yeah, in 2010, he played in The Conspirator, which is the Lincoln movie that's directed by Robert Redford. He plays John Wilkes Booth. So he plays one of he plays the bad monkey in
Bad Monkey,
who kills Caesar or tries to kill Caesar.
Right. Who wrote Jacobs, right?
Well, you know, I was reading this great deconstruction of the assassination of Kennedy. I'm not Kennedy. I'm sorry, Lincoln. Same thing. And they were just, he was just going through the whole story about John Wilkes Booth and how famous he was and how, you know, well respected. And, you know, he was kind of like the opposite of what you'd expect a lone gunman to be. And it would be almost, you know, in today's world, it would be like Brad Pitt trying to kill, you know, Obama. He was that famous. He was that well respected. And that just blows my mind. He was a star.
Just to interrupt, Alan, did John Wilkes' brother save Lincoln's son from a train?
Is yeah, that right? Yeah.
That's yeah, fucking yeah.
That actually happened before. What's weird is that actually happened before the assassination. So you have to realize that the whole Booth family was really famous. So what Michael's saying is true. And the brother, who was equally famous, the father was equally famous. The brother was, okay, so Abraham Lincoln's son is on a train track one day. A train's coming to the station. He falls. He's going to get, like, his legs crushed in this train tracks, and a man catches him. And since he was the famous one, Lincoln's son is like, holy shit, I just got saved by Edwin Booth. Holy fuck, this celebrity just saved my life. But the celebrity has no idea who the kid is. He doesn't know, oh, you're the president's son.
Mm-hmm.
So the kid knows he got saved by a celebrity. The celebrity doesn't know. Then turn around within a few months, I believe, John Wilkes Booth kills Lincoln, and it's many years later. The Lincoln's son ends up writing an article, they end up publishing an article where he's talking about it and how this weird coincidence that Robert Lincoln. So he gets, he publishes this thing saying, oh, I got saved by Edwin Booth when I was younger. And this whole thing that he ends up finding out about it. Edwin Booth, after John Wilkes kills the president, Edwin Booth kind of, his career shut down. Your brother just killed the president. Famous as you might be, no one really likes you. All sorts of shit happens. And he kind of went into a depression. He finds out that he saved Robert Lincoln, and it actually makes him feel good about himself, and he goes back into acting.
Wait a minute, Robert Lincoln?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have Robert Kennedy? What? I don't...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's...
And brother, yeah.
Because, you know, I'm going to look this up, but... you know, Robert Lincoln ends up becoming the president and the Secretary of War. So, you know, again, you have the opposite. You know, we take this story as like, oh, yay, the president who was assassinated, who everyone loves, his son lives. But the son ends up going on to become Secretary of War, probably being responsible for many other people's deaths. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So again, it's if you're from the South, you might be like fucking douchebag. But if you're, I mean, you know, is it all these things you can look into any number of ways? Robert Todd Lincoln, yeah. Born August 1st, died July 26th. And this guy is also at the center of a few other coincidences. He was present at three different presidential assassinations.
Okay.
And I'm no sure doubt a Mason.
No doubt. So you guys... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, the thing that's funky about, you know, the whole thing is also that the Masons are very much present on both the South and the North, both sides of the border, and it really lends, it makes you go, you know, because who's pulling the strings on these kind of weird, very highly symbolic assassinations? Because of course that's the one thing that unites Lincoln and Kennedy most dramatically, is the fact that they are so mediated, so incredibly, you know, they're meant to be huge spectacles.
Right.
You can kill anyone. You could easily have killed Kennedy on one of his nightly, or not Kennedy, I'm sorry, geez. You could easily have killed Lincoln on one of his nightly walks through the grounds at the White House that he did, that people were always, that the people who were supposed to be guarding him were upset with him for doing that. But no, you had to choose the box seat at the Ford Theater and, you know, turn it into this incredibly public media event.
Stage performance.
Yes, a stage performance, exactly like Kennedy.
It was staged.
Exactly like 9-1-1, you know?
So
I just can't believe that friggin' there's a monkey movie and the dude's name is Caesar and his main antagonist is friggin' Jean-Luc Booth. That's fucking...
That's huge.
It's fucking my mind up.
You guys know about the... I may have talked about this to you before, but the Queen on the Jubilee of 1977 unveiled the rejected 2001 monolith that was like crystal-like, and they put a crown in it. You know about that? She unveiled the 2001 monolith on the anniversary of Robert Kennedy's assassination. Which was weird because fucking Robert Kennedy had dinner with Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate the night before he died. And then Rosemary's Baby came out within less than a week of the assassination afterwards. You guys like,
nowhere. Yeah. It's fucked up.
Yeah. So I it's really weird because this, the Queen unveiling this monolith is really strange, dude. What you got?
Do you know that Faye Ray, who's from the original King Kong, is in a movie called Black Moon?
No way.
No way.
Really?
All right, I fold.
Right?
I know.
Here, boom. Check out your... Love battling against the sorcery of the jungle, Fay Wray in Black Moon.
Holy shit. That's a sink gold mine, I bet.
Fuck this. I'm done. It's 1 o'clock.
That's crazy. Dorothy Burgess? Shit.
I'm done.
That's the sink apocalypse right there, man.
Love battling against the sorcery of the jungle.
It doesn't matter because everything's going to go to shit tomorrow and we're going to be like, oh, fuck. Oh.
Hey, you know what? It's a long transition to Total Chaos, buddy. A long transition. We're on, you know, a certain part of the spectrum of it, but it's still.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
Well, you guys, it's been a pleasure. It's midnight here, and I'm and I know that's early for you guys, but I'm a lightweight, so I'm gonna bow out. Thank you for the great time, though.
Oh, totally, dude. That was a perfect note, actually. You just blew the whole thing apart, Alan, with that one.
I'm done.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, it's 3 a.m. I should be going to bed anyway. I wasn't even going to hang out that long. But how do I avoid?
Complete madness.
All right. Well, good night.
Thank you, guys. Awesome.
It was a
thank
pleasure.
You, everybody. And good can night. We just, can, yeah, thank you, you guys. You're awesome. What do we got?
Are we all leaving, or is it?
I don't know. We don't have to necessarily. Well, okay. I mean, some people can.
I'm not going to sleep. So, David and Alex, if you want to stay on, Patrick, if you want to stay on,
I'm done.
Will,
yeah, I think I should fold here. So I'm hosting this call. If I get off, it's gonna screw you up. Maybe John, you can stay with David and Alex and Patrick.
Yeah, I'll just start a new call up, and either we'll stay for another episode, or we'll include it in the next one. It doesn't matter.
Oh, why not be part of the same episode? Yeah, just.
Oh, why not? Yeah,
absolutely. All right, guys, have a great night. I'll talk to you soon. It's a real, real pleasure talking to you all. Thanks so much.
Good night. See ya.
Bye.
You guys finally finished your Mad Men post, or Patrick? Was that just you?
That was just Patrick.
I did use some quotes of David's, though. I actually even quoted some of your passages from your SyncBook chapter.
Oh, really? Cool. No, I haven't looked at that post yet, but I got way into some of your older ones. I read over some of the ones I'd already read and looked at them. The amount of information is hard to, it's like there's all these really like great bits that I didn't necessarily like retain, though I should have. Yeah, it's fucking a lot of stuff to keep track of.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick, what was like the most, what blew your mind the most, I guess, that you felt like you needed to include it? I looked through it, but I haven't seen the show, so I really have no frame of reference, so I can't say what seems important to me and what doesn't, but what stuck out to you and why did you put it in there?
What's the show you're talking about now? I just joined.
Mad Men, sir.
What?
Mad Men.
Oh, Mad Men. Right. Gotcha.
Have you seen it?
I only watched the first season.
I think the sheer amount of Babylon working themes in it is just too much to ignore. And I don't know. I just felt like chronicling all of those because I guess nobody else has yet. So that's kind of what that post was about, just sort of laying out this like epic, Babylon working motif in that entire series.
It's true. It's really weird.
And all of the, John Lennon, Sharon Tate themes in there as well, woven in. It's just kind of seems like something he's obsessed with.
So is it Joan, that big boob Joan, or is that someone different?
Yeah.
Okay, so is she Babylon and Sharon Tate, or is that different?
No, she's mostly just Babylon. Dawn's wife, Megan, resonated as a Sharon Tate figure. And also, I would say probably Dawn's daughter, Sally, but a little more subtle there.
I'm trying to scroll through your thing.
It's pretty long.
Yeah.
Took like 5 months to make that post.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know you guys are working back and forth, or at least you're bouncing ideas off David.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've been bouncing ideas off of each other for days. But this is Patrick's baby here. I mean, I see a lot of things that I've connected and things in here that I can relate to, but that always happens.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. There's certain key points that are just mind-blowing. That's why, like, if you don't... Oh, God. Oh, so, okay, so that was the thing. There was the episode of the fucking 723. That was the name of the episode, was 723. And he signed... What was the deal? What did he sign?
He signed a contract with Conrad Hilton.
So he signed a contract with Mr. Hilton, who in the thing is obsessed with the moon, right?
Yeah.
He wants the moon in all his advertising. And then you have the fucking Monolith Hilton there. But then the fact that they're making it a point, such a point to like make the date that he gives the name of the episode, in case you miss that there's a significance to the date. It's so weird.
And on that contract, you see his address, and it's 42 Bullet Park Lane.
Mm-hmm. So Bullet.
So there's no. Bullet. Yeah, you can see that there's. Yeah. Yeah, he's emphasizing the 723 there by using the 42 as his address.
Right, because 7 times 2 times 3 is 42, and so he has 42 right below it with Bullet Park Road.
Yeah. And we also see in another episode that Joan's address is also 42 when they put an enlarged photocopy of her driver's license up on the wall.
Oh, shit.
So it's not just some arbitrary number, it seems, that he picked. It's kind of like when Kubrick, in 2001, when that announcement comes over the speaker saying the blue sweater is missing, and then that lady's blue sweater keeps coming and going off the back of her chair. It's these little winks, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Are the people that wrote the show, do they have any connection with other stuff that would give some indication that they're into this sort of esoteric material, or is it just the proof is in the show itself?
Not so much. First thing I could think of is the production company logo is the Sun card from the Rider-Waite tarot deck. So obviously the creator of the show is into the tarot. But I mean, as far as like being connected with, I mean, like Kubrick, is that what you're asking?
That or anything. I mean, any other shows that really have stood out to you?
Oh, well, the guy that created Mad Men co-wrote the last like 3 or 4 seasons of The Sopranos, which I haven't seen, but I know there's that. And he also co-wrote Becker, that comedy with Ted Danson.
Really?
Yeah. That's about it. That's about all he's done, really.
Yeah, it's kind of out of nowhere. It's total left field. But the thing is that there's so many writers for this show, and mm-hmm. they all come from different places. And yeah. What is it? 9 of them are female, right?
Well, there's 9 writers and 7 are female.
Oh, 9, 7. Okay, I see. But yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed that. Now, yeah. After the fact, it makes total sense, but
that's what's so interesting about these shows is that you're like, okay, well, they come from a creator or someone who's a core person, but then there's a huge staff of writers. So the question is, are they all conspiring to do this? This is my favorite show, Carnival. You see that a lot where it came from this one guy's vision, Dan Knauf, but there was a fucking cadre of writers. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how could they all know that? And so where does synchronicity and intention begin and end?
Yeah.
Well, it comes in the collaboration of all these people, and I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like David Lynch is famous for just taking accidents and synchronicities and incorporating them into the film, and then of course his films are just overflowing with all of these esoteric symbols and whatnot. Same goes for any kind of filmic production, I think, right? Like Stanley Kubrick did the same thing. I mean, even though he was so obsessive about all the details, he still would like, he would get it to come from the actors and the people. Like, that was his magic, I guess, and just getting what he wanted from people. I don't know. I think the same would apply to Mad Men and any other TV show that's like that.
What did you really like about Mulholland Drive, Alex? Did you link something to that in Facebook? And I like that scene.
I haven't seen it in a long time, to be honest. I haven't. It wasn't my favorite Lynch movie, but I need to go back and watch it. What do I like about it? A lot of things, I guess. Just what it's about, really. It's just it's such a horrifying nightmare of a movie, and it's about the fracturing of identity. And of course, it came out in 2001, and the way it relates to his previous movie, Lost Highway, well, it's not exactly his previous, but the one before Lost Highway, which also about the fracturing of the identity of this man who kills his wife, and then Mulholland Drive is about the fracturing identity of this woman. And so I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen it, so I can't really go too into details about it.
Well, it just synced with me because I had there was the Borg cube UFO sighting, whether it's or not. I don't. Yeah, and, like, there's a cowboy that jumped out of nowhere for me, and that dude you linked in the video.
Tell me about that cowboy, because where was that? Where did that happen? How did that happen?
Misty's telling me there's also a blue cube in Mulholland Drive. Is that?
Oh yeah, the blue box that carries. It's like the gateway to a alternate reality, or I don't know. There's so much symbolism in that movie. It's hard to, really impossible to.
Okay, I didn't know that, so that makes it easier. I'm in Vancouver right now, so that's where it happened. We were driving down the road, and some fucking cowboy popped out of nowhere.
Was it like in the city or in the?
Yeah, right in the city. Not at a crosswalk, just totally jaywalking, and almost like almost bumped into the car. And it wasn't horrifying; it was just annoying enough to complain about it. He seemed oblivious.
I had an experience one time where I was driving down the street, and a guy walked in front of me. It looked like he was trying to get hit, and he like walked right out in front of me, and just kind of gave this grin, and I had to swerve. It was really disturbing. I don't know what that's about.
I think there's a lot of suicide of people, but
I guess that's all.
Whether they're synchronistic or not is a whole other subject. So I don't know what this dude's doing. But, what's your favorite Lynch movie, then?
My favorite Lynch movie? God, that's hard to say.
Lost Highway for me.
Probably Blue Velvet. But maybe The Straight Story, actually.
Really?
Straight Story is just an incredible movie. Who said really there?
I did.
Oh, have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw it when it came out. I mean, it's been a while. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I just, if you're going to pick a favorite Lynch movie, I just thought that was really an interesting angle.
Well, yeah, it's so different from his other ones, but it's no less fraught with esotericness. We did it. We talked about that in the last Moon Room thing, because it came out in 99 and kind of had this whole interpretation of it as being like Alvin Straight's journey being like crossing the abyss, and the journey of the American post-World War II American journey going to the end of the century and the millennium, switching over into the next millennium with 9/11 and everything breaking down. But aside from that, it's just such an incredibly moving, sincere, like, film it just feels very positive in a way.
Mm-hmm. And some of his best cinematography, I'll say that.
Oh yeah, and the way he incorporates the actors are all just. I mean, it's all like about this. Well, of course, about the senior citizen, the old man with lots of old friends. He just gets. It's so funny. I think I called it the ultimate respect your elders movie. It's just like, I don't know. But Mark had this whole, Mark came up with this whole sync to it with Pink Floyd's album Animals, I think.
Mostly Passing Your Time in the Grassland Away. I can feel it.
I can't remember, but it was a pretty incredible little sync that he did. I don't want to speak for him, but.
you for listening to this broadcast from the SyncBook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune in to our other SyncBook Radio programs, 42 Minutes, Always Record, the Marty Leeds Math Magical Radio Hour, Synchronize, Pentimental, and Sync Quick News. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.